Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I am your host, Callie Fell. Today, I have the privilege of welcoming Alicia, a retired nurse, Army veteran, blog writer, and creator of a new nursing resource center for people with NPE, a non-paternity event, which we will dive into later in the show and explain what that means. Alicia has co-founded two nonprofits in her pioneering work for NPEs, and remains a leading advocate for those impacted by DNA surprise. Her service on behalf of the community includes education, genealogical research, network, and the provision of informed emotional support. In addition, she has created online private groups that have reached people in the thousands. Alicia's own experience with commercial DNA kit in 2014 resulted in severe shock when she discovered that the man who'd raise her was not her genetic father. Learning the identity of her biological father took 4 long years of research, and the news that he'd passed away years before her discovery will always be a profound source of sorrow for her. After connecting with her genetic family, she learned that 4 relatives had suffered from brain tumors much like her own. Had she known that she had this genetic predisposition, her doctors could have diagnosed her tumor much sooner. Spurred by her intimate knowledge of the harm done by genetic deceit, Alicia has proposed and fought hard for broad-based fertility fraud legislation. And such bills have been introduced now in multiple states, Iowa being the first to pass one into law. Alicia resides in Queen Anne in Seattle, Washington, with her beautiful German Shepherd, Hannah, and she has 2 grown sons. And as a fun point of reference, she lives quite possibly in the exact fictitious location as the hit series Frasier's lead character lived and played by Kelsey Grammer. So Alicia, thank you so much for taking time to join me today and talk about something most people actually aren't familiar with.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yeah. So first, can you define what an NPE is, especially for listeners that may have never heard this term?
Okay. You know, it's funny because when I found out that I was an NPE, I had no idea about any terms. And every time we have new people come into our private groups, I can tell you almost every day somebody's asking, what are these terms mean? Well, we have now a significant amount of terms that we utilize with the folks that come in to that need help. But NPE it has a couple of different definitions depending on, you know, where you stand with stuff. But basically the non-paternal event is what it stands for. It basically is, and there's some that go with non-parental. So if you're dealing with my situation, which I found out my paternal side, my biological father was somebody I never got to meet, but that it essentially is a person that finds out as myself that the person who raised me was not my biological father, not my genetic father. There's another term that is used that is a little bit more inclusive, which is some of the work that you guys do with the nonprofit that you're involved with, that has used the MPE, which is M as in Mary, misattributed paternity event or experience, which actually, interesting enough, when I was working with a nonprofit, the last nonprofit I was working with, we had several meetings about 3-4 years ago about what does it all mean to be an MPE. And so we started utilizing that term. And a woman here in Seattle that I've gotten to know very well, her name is Sabrina. She's actually a teacher in our public school system here, who has shared with us on many times on these the work we were doing. We were trying to decide what is the best way to describe who we are, and we came up with, she did, the word for E as an experience, so misattributed parental experience. And it seems to have clicked. It took a while for a lot of people to understand that, but I think because of its inclusive nature. We can talk with you about the third party, you know, reproduction, those. We talk about the donor conceived people, obviously. We talk also about adoptees, and then of course myself and NPE.
So yeah, you were drawn to this because of your own personal story. So can you maybe start with that now that we understand what NPE is as the crux of your advocacy work? Tell us about your experience.
Yes, I'll be happy to do that. In 2014, I took an over-the-counter DNA test, mostly for genealogical research. I had spoken with a half-brother. My father, who had raised me, was married before he married my mom, and he had two kids, two boys, 10, 12 years older than myself. One of them was very interested in genealogy, and I had mentioned to him the work I was doing, and I wanted to really study the lines. And I asked him if I paid for the test, if he would take it. And so we both took the test in 14. When the test came back, it showed that we were not related. I thought he was my half-brother. And when it came back that we weren't matched, I literally was sitting like I am talking to you in front of a laptop, seeing Ancestry sent me an email that my test came back, and it said, basically, I was one of the first thing I noticed was the ethnicity was half Jewish. Well, I had no idea, absolutely no idea that I was had this, you know, shift. Sure. And then on top of that, when it showed that he and I were, I went immediately, I was looking at the ethnicity, the cultural stuff, immediately went to look at the matches, which is such a normal thing that almost everybody I've spoken to do. They go, they look at their matches and they're like, you know, they're like me. They see what happened has happened. This, like, you have a half brother and he's all of a sudden not even showing up in the matches at all. I literally, I had a physical reaction. I was sitting like on a booth, like on a bar with my laptop was higher. And I started like falling down. I thought I was going to pass out. I had to hold on tight to the table. Because I really literally thought I was going to pass out. I felt my heart rate go up because as a nurse, as a registered nurse, I knew something was wrong. So it was life-changing for me for certain.
How old were you when you found this out?
50. I have to think I'm 60 now. I'm in my 60s now. I think, what was it, 2014, so what was I, 51, 52?
Wow.
Yes.
So what was, like, beyond the physical immediate reaction, what did you think, okay, I need to confront, I need to hide, like, what was your emotional?
Well, you know us nurses, we got to do detective work.
Right?
We got to get all into it, you know? And so I was fearful. My mother was still living at the time, and she's still living, obviously. My two brothers have passed away now, though, which is sad for me to tell you that. I decided to say something. I have a younger half sister, and I have two sons. One of my sons, I mentioned this to him, and my sister, who they both were in shock. They said, "No, it can't be. It can't be." They both took the DNA test themselves, and it showed the same thing. My sister is all of a sudden my half sister, who I thought was my full sister, and my son is showing no match to my now step brother. Who was a half brother and then he's the half nephew of my, it's so confusing, isn't it? Half sister. So these were signs that I needed to, I wanted to have all my ducks in a row before I approached my mother. So it took about 4 months, 4 or 5 months before I would talk to her. And I was still trying to deal with processing. And I'm a person that takes a long time to process. So I was an emotional wreck. So by the time I spoke to my mother about it, I had already, and let me share to your audience, at this point in 2014, there were not as many people, as many millions of people now that have taken the Ancestry DNA test. On top of that, my mother is German, of German origin. She was married at the time when I, you know, was conceived, but she was an immigrant too. She had not become an American citizen. So she was the first American to come, you know, German American to come over. My matches were fourth to sixth cousin matches of Jewish ancestry, Jewish descent. And there was my mother being the first one over here. There were no matches on her side. So it was a mess when I saw all the matches that were there. I didn't know anything. So obviously I was calling my mother with no information except to tell her, hey, something's not right with the DNA here. Mm-hmm. And I would do a lot of walking, and I was on a walk. I decided I'm going to collar while I'm walking, keep my body moving, because I needed to like physically just.
Right.
Like, talking to my mother was so emotional. As soon as I started to talk, she became very quiet on the phone and immediately said, that DNA is lying. She said, that is a lie. That's not true. And I knew she was lying. I knew she wasn't being honest with me. And so we hung up, and I just started having tears come down my eyes. I continued to walk. About 10 minutes later, she called me back and she confessed. She basically said to me that she'd had an affair, but that she kind of blocked it out of her memory. She went back to her husband. She'd had a 3-4 month long affair, and ended up going back to her husband. And they raised me. They ended up raising me and decided to keep this deep secret to themselves, which is something you see in our groups. It's the same story. Yeah. Different people, different circumstances, different parts of the country. Now internationally, obviously, too, our groups have really grown. But it's just, it's sad. It's absolutely sad. But yes, that's how it ended up happening. She told me she remembered very little about him. Obviously, this is like, we're talking a half a century ago at right. this point. And so it took 4 years of sleuthing and having genealogists help me with the work and wow. looking. And it was an amazing amount of research that had to go into that before we found my biological father.
Was your stepfather still alive during all of this, or was just your mother?
Unfortunately, no. But I will tell you, I had some interesting hints from him. He died in 1993. On his deathbed, he was diagnosed with lung cancer. It went to his brain. And my family, my mother, my sister, I'm a RN, was a nurse at the time, obviously. And we kept him at home, hospice. Mm-hmm. And once on his deathbed, probably maybe a week prior to him dying, he said to me, and, you know, his cancer was gone pretty bad. He was going blind from it, too. So it was like his eyes were like up. Staring, so sometimes I wasn't sure if he was all there. Mm-hmm. He made a comment to me, he goes, your mother is not who you think your mother is. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Right. And, what kind of encrypted message?
What an encrypted message that just sort of like, I thought, okay, he's just not making any sense here. Right. But he was trying to share something with me. I'm convinced of that now. I just didn't know it at the time. And I just kind of let it blow over my head. And I said, Dad, it's okay. You know, it's fine. He was dealing also, I could tell, and we knew, anger toward my mom. And we know that in death, when people are dying and things are going bad, sometimes we see all kinds of emotions. And in death, in that time frame, they're angry at whoever. Some people are, it's a loving. But Dad, my stepdad was angry. He was really angry during his time of death.
In the work that we do with donor conceived people, right. we, you know, it brings a lot of similar things up that you were talking about. And one of the biggest things that's kind of changing law, and now in Colorado, anonymous sperm donation and egg donation is no longer, as of 2024, it will be banned to be able to give sperm and eggs anonymously. Because as you point out in your story, medical information is really important. And you have a brain tumor, right? And you've been dealing with that diagnosis, and you found out that others in your biologic or genetic family also had this experience. And do you want to speak to that a little bit about how important it is for people to have their genetic information and medical history?
Oh, God. Yes. Back in 2011, I was diagnosed with a massive brain tumor that got misdiagnosed. I ended up having a couple surgeries prior to it and had absolutely no idea until I knew something was off. So it was ended up being a motor cortex brain tumor. Thank God they got it all. Just so you know, I don't have the brain tumor anymore, but I'm watched very closely. And it's now been, I'm 10 years cancer free from that. So
congratulations.
I've had cancer a couple other times, but it seems like I have been able to be that miracle person that keeps living. So I'm actually feel like very blessed to have made it into my 60s. So that diagnosis was very rough. And because if I had known my medical history, let's say the history of family members, cousins, perhaps I would have been able to go to my doctors when I had all these vague symptoms and say, hey, this is going on. What do you think? And it took, unfortunately, 3 or 4 years of going back and forward till they finally did an MRI and they found this massive lesion in my head. And four surgeries after that for a craniotomy, half my skull taken off. It was a lot. It was a lot that I went through. And I think the fact of the matter is we work with people in these private groups every day that come to us, and a number of them deal with these medical mysteries that they go to their family members or their moms who may still be living and go, or the dad too, maybe, who may actually think they are the biological father. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we don't know why are you having these problems? What's going on? My mother knew. I have absolutely 100% she knew. And for whatever reason, shame, guilt, just not wanting to come out with the truth, the time, the cultures of those days back in the 50s and 60s, she just didn't tell the truth. And honestly, she didn't. I don't think she understood the medical ramifications of what she was doing either. This is what I've seen also with those in third party, reproduction. And what I noticed with the work I was doing, one of the big things early on in my work, after I found my biological paternal family and found these problems, I started investigating and looking into the donor conceived community. And I became extremely interested. My heart was just broken. I don't think there was not a moment probably that I wasn't thinking about what could I do. I'm retired. I've been retired for 10 years now. And during those early years, since 2017, 18, I'm like looking for what can I do to help? And that's where I was at with it. And so I became friends with people in the donor conceived community. And one of the meetings I had, one of the very first times I met with some of those folks, was at an NYU bioethics conference in, I believe it was in 2018. I met some of the most amazing people, some that run big groups now also for donor conceived, that spoke at that conference. And because of them and because of the work that was going on, and I will tell you, it was a moment. It was a moment in my life. I believe it was a moment in probably 50 to 75 people in the donor conceived community that were there speaking or, discussing the all these issues that were coming up. And it broke my heart to see that the hurt that was going on in this community and people being also talking about medical diagnosis that they had no idea about, especially those that, in the Jewish community that were being diagnosed with not too far from here, a woman that's a donor conceived that found out, and she had the BRCA1/BRCA2 gene. Mm-hmm. And she went ahead electively and had the surgeries to, have her breasts removed. And so these are things that, she's in her mid-30s, but these are lies and stories that have been wronged. These people, we've been wronged for so long.
So in your work that sprouted from this, in your nonprofit work and your advocacy work, you have facilitated family reunions. You've found the donor of multiple groups of donor conceived individuals. You've been instrumental in finding professional services in mental health for people. Would you share more about that?
Oh, I'd be happy to. It's actually been the heart of my work. It just gives me a lot of, maybe it's been my way of working with my own pain. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's like out of sight, out of mind with what I've had to deal with. Let me go help somebody else and get them through their pain. Yeah. And through that, I have worked with, right now I've lost the count, but there's probably I'll give you some examples. There's a gentleman on the East Coast. He's in his 30s. He was referred over to the services that I was doing. It was 2 years ago. When he was referred over, he was new in therapy, and he started going to therapy, and a therapist referred him over. He was at a point, he knew he was donor conceived. He just had not been able to figure out how to find his family. So when he got referred over to me, I have a genealogist that I've worked personally with for 10 years. And there are obviously other free groups out there too that are amazing that do DNA angel work. But this work became part of who I am early on. And we took his case on, and within 36 hours, we found his biological father, his, his donor, who many times, I will tell you, they are physicians. This gentleman was a physician and living way over on the West Coast in your side of the country. And then, you know, we're able to give this guy the name. Now, he has found out he has a dozen half siblings that this guy, this donor, this doctor, is the biological genetic father to. So I am able to give him this information. What he does with that information is up to him, as far as I'm concerned. I have recently spoken to him. We keep in contact. That's part of the mental health, I think, the nursing part. I keep in contact with many of the people I've helped out. And he has now met his biological genetic father and said it went great. That's one awesome example of the work we've done. There's gentlemen, two gentlemen up in, and these were separate cases in Michigan. Now, if you are familiar, there was a doctor up there who gave birth to thousands and thousands of children. And in that work, he decided he was going to put his own sperm in hundreds of those women. He started working in the OBGYN field probably in the 1940s. He just passed away, I believe it was last year, and he was over 100 years old. He worked for I think probably 50 years, if not longer. And he is talking to with some of the people that were his offspring. He was real matter of fact about the work he did, even though it was, we know, wrong. In his mind, he was doing the right thing. He's thinking he's given a great sperm to his patients and, you know, thinking he probably would never be found out. And unfortunately, that's not what happened, you know. So there were a couple cases that came our way. These two gentlemen, separate cases, completely separate cases. Actually, both of them were not this doctor's biological offspring, but we were able to find who they were. One of them was found that found that he was up in the New York area. The biological father had started, was a very good businessman. And this gentleman ended up, he was an amazing businessman. And he realized, wow, this is the genetic information there to know that, hey, it all made sense to him. And he has been very grateful to that. And he has actually been able to meet a couple of other children of this man. Mm-hmm. So he's got more family. The second man, all he was interested in was the identity. He didn't care about meeting any of them. He just needed, for his own sanity, he needed to know. And so we were able to provide that name. And it was a doctor, again, in the South. Now, all these men have passed away, these fathers that donated. Another case was a woman in the South, also in the state of Alabama, that was looking for her donors. It was her mother that was the donor conceived. And we were able to find that biological connection. And that was, these are all DNA cases where they come to us and they have connections of centimorgans, maybe 200, 300. These people are second cousins. What you have to do is triangulate and figure out, like, okay, this second cousin, okay, where do they match in with this other person? Maybe they have great, great grandparents or great grandparents that are mutual. And then you bring the lines down and you find the matches. Wow. And then you're able to identify who the biological father is due to that. It takes some work. You have to build trees. And this is where all that ancestry stuff becomes so important to anybody who's looking at it. And they want you to explain it to them.
Right.
It takes time. You know, I've done multiple Zooms with people and showed them how the work was done. One case was a woman who I found out there were three matches that ended up being half, two of them were half nephews and one was a half niece. And here's the weird thing with it, you know, the domino effect. All three of them had no idea that one of their parents was donor conceived. Wow. And so not only do we see the impact on the person personally giving, you know, contacting us for help, but we now know of three other individuals impacted by this, the secrets, the lies, the, you know, and I do want to give some, I don't want to be so harsh on the parents, because some of them could not have children and they were looking to figure out how could they have kids. You know, these doctors said, we're going to give you a little help. We're going to do this for you. Mm-hmm. Some of the mothers didn't even know when they were being impregnated in the office that it was, you know, somebody else's sperm. And then they were told to go home and have sex with their husbands. So, you know, the story
is like deception.
It's crazy. But can you imagine this was happening, you know, way back when? I mean, it's
no.
It's absolutely crazy when you think about it. These are some sample stories, and of all those stories, you know, I suspect anywhere from now 75 donor conceived people were found. We found their biological connections. Wow. It was a pretty incredible, and you know, for me, I can't tell you that feeling to know that I was a part of helping somebody find their true identity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't imagine how you talk about helping them kind of put the puzzle pieces together that is genealogy. And I can't imagine receiving the news or reading an email and kind of being like, wait a second, I'm not who I thought I was and I'm not genetically related to these. And then with that muddled mind, you know, try to make sense of everything. So that's great that you're able to help and kind of explain that and help these people find wholeness and you know, find whatever it is they're looking for, whether it's just an identity or if it's a connection or, and it sounds like you've worked with a wide variety of people through your work and helping them. And it sounds like, and from my understanding of you, your work expands beyond NPEs and has included the biological parents or grandparents. Yeah. And one of the stories you talked about, the nieces and nephews. So can you share some of the work you've done with the population that's not NPEs directly?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. I wasn't sure how much you wanted to speak on that, but it's become more, it's like important. It's like a 360 now. We're not talking about one person, you know. Now, I will tell you, I am child focused. Everything about what I want to do is about the child. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no other, the baby to me, you know, coming into the world, they deserve to know their truth.
Yeah.
This brings me to a couple things. When I'm going to give you an example of one of the stories. I picked up a book called The Birth Certificate in American, I think it's called The Birth Certificate in American History. Now, it's a very, you know, it's a book on history, okay? But it's also a book on the social construct of what's going on in society and politics.
Mm-hmm.
The birth certificate has a 200-year history in the United States.
Yeah.
And what it was utilized for over the years and what it's morphed into now, it needs to be looked at. The laws today, they need to be changed. And this goes back to donor conceived. We felt like when I was working with the nonprofit work, that we needed to really look at broad-based fertility, you know, legislation, because we felt like we could really see some change quicker in that than the birth certificate. So it's all slow, as you know.
But so slow.
It's so slow. But the birth certificate history, when you look at it, though, it's very difficult to change names on that. And when you look at one circumstance that came up recently for me, is a case on the East Coast that is, I cannot name the names on it. I wouldn't want to do that anyways for most people that would not want that. But a gentleman finds out, man, he's a nurse. His mother's a nurse. He's a partner with a woman. They have this woman has a baby, and he's told the baby's not his, even though he had been a partner with her. And later on, finds out that indeed it is his biological child. This is 3-4 years have gone by. So it's in the courts, and you know, it doesn't look good because on the birth certificate, it has one person's name, and the laws have just not caught up with the changes with, you know, what we would like to see in a, for me on the birth certificate is let's get the DNA test done to prove, you know, who is the biological parents. Mm-hmm. I am praying that before I leave this earth, that that becomes part of the paperwork involved yeah. with birth certificates. Here's what stops this. In the states, in the states, and we're just talking our states, folks know on the state level, on these birth certificates, that if you have a certain amount of people with, you have these papers that go to the federal side, they get a kickback of money. And it's in the millions of dollars helping to pay for service, social services for, you know, folks that need help. Not only that, but in a, for other things. So the states are looking for federal dollars, and the birth certificates seem to initiate that. And it's something, I am not an attorney, I'm not a politician, but these are things that all play a part in why we're not, we don't see fast movement in these areas.
Meaning that they get a kickback by amendments to birth certificates, or
no, just filling them out, getting them filled out, getting them to them. There's a law that just passed in the state of Tennessee, and it shares a really good information. It's in their state alone. If they get their efficiently get their information to back to the federal government, they get kickbacks of something like $56 million. I was like shocked. It's a lot of money. So every state is getting, you know, money when these birth certificates get in. And I don't want to misspeak, but right. This is stuff that is actually happening. I think politics gets involved with all this, mm-hmm. all the social issues that we have. I mean, we're having a lot of problems, and we need to address them. And, you know, it brings out the fact that one of the reasons why I've kind of stopped, and, you know, in my own work, I want to help people advocate. And I went more to the mental health side because this will tear you up. I mean, this is for the young people, you know, our young people that are dealing with this and watching this happen personally to them. My birth certificate is wrong. Okay. In my state where I was born, I can't even really change it. So yeah. I don't even have a choice, you know, I'd like
this
to
is a really, thing. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish your thought.
Oh, it's a problem. It's a huge yeah. problem.
Yeah, it's an important topic. And I was actually just yesterday, I think I was on the Donor Sibling Registry. They have a blog post on the problem with birth certificates. And actually someone reached out to me on Twitter and wanted to know the status of birth certificates in the United States concerning third-party reproduction. And this is huge. People don't realize this, that it's become, in my opinion, just a legal deed of ownership. The birth certificate. It's who is the legal parent, who, you know, of this child, which it's not even about genetics. It needs to be modified. Like you said, people who are born from surrogacy arrangements and likely from either an egg or sperm donor, and I always use that in quotes, they have their mom or dad or their two dads listed on their birth certificate, and they may not be genetically related to either of them. They won't know who birthed them into this world, who helped them transition from embryo or from uterus to earthside. They may not know who their birth or the biological mother is. None of that is recorded. And it's a really big problem. And I think this is just another example of how technology kind of got the cart in front of the horse. We have not Yes. thought about how these things impact individuals. The birth certificate is not a deed of ownership. It is a, you know, it's not that. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I was just reading about this and just writing about it actually for an article I'm working on.
Well, I would highly encourage you to, if you want to read the history behind the birth certificate, pick up the birth certificate and American history. Not too many people will want to read that, but let me tell you, it's really interesting though. And it gives you all the background. And true, as you said, you know, people are, you know, I'm okay with whatever. I, as a registered nurse, for me, when I was working, I want people to have their autonomy with what they believe is right for them and their personhood. Mm-hmm. That's important to be respectful to these people, to anybody.
Sure, absolutely.
In turn, you and I deserve respect, right? I, you know, I was recently, saw something online, and something was brought up, and you might really appreciate this, about nurses. I have a very good friend that's a head nurse or manager of a labor and delivery here in Seattle. And I had to text her and tell her this story. I said, there is people out there that actually say stuff in, that are not in the medical field, that think nurses are telling patients what to do, put on their birth certificates, or what they should, maybe you should adopt your children out and or do this or that. Giving, I was like in shock. I mean, we are not telling people what to do.
Not at all. I work in labor and delivery, and the most I know about a birth certificate is, oh, the birth certificate lady, because she's a lady at our job, will be coming by to help you with that.
I know. It's like, I could not believe it. Like when I saw this, I'm like, and heard about it, I'm like, you all do not understand the laws and the rules that we as nurses have to, you know, we're mandated to be a certain ethical, the way right. we do our job, and nurses and doctors, you know. So it's a real unfortunate, you know, somebody hears something that somebody else said, but they weren't there in the room to see exactly what happened. Oh, the nurse said this, or the nurse did that. I was just like, you know, man, I'm going to have to, and I'm sure you appreciate it, I'm going to protect us nurses. Yep. It's just a real, it's really unfortunate that people are misinformed, and it's due to emotions. Usually, you know, a grandmother finds this out and it's like, those nurses did this, or those doctors did that. No, we're not doing that. We're not involved with that. We're not involved with who writes what on the paperwork that goes to the vital statistics. That is not our job. You know, it's interesting. I hope that you'll look into more into that. And I hope that we see actual, you know, change in law. You know, that is why I really appreciate the work that has been done by Eve Wiley. Mm-hmm. I believe at this point, Eve has probably saw 9, maybe 10 states have the fertility fraud law on the books.
Yes.
And she also, I think she's continuing doing work that her work is a little bit narrow compared to the broad-based fertility fraud bill that was passed in Iowa that I was instrumental in seeing passed. It brings in this, I think I want to read this to you so you understand what we did with the broad
bill. Please, yes.
Okay, and it's what it does, the definition of it is, the fraud part would include the physician, the clinic, and any donor misrepresentations. That legislative that was passed in Iowa would supported a criminal penalty as well as a civil cause of action with standing for the patient's spouse, and the offspring. And this is what I can't remember the exact law that was passed, but most of this was in there, and a minimum 5-year statute of limitation from the time the fraud is discovered. All our bills at the time when I was working with the nonprofit work would include a criminal penalty for a physician who also used his own sperm, and a provision to lose their medical license if they were convicted of fertility fraud. Mm-hmm. Or a civil act. So this, to me, I like the idea of broad-based. I think what Eve was, and I like Eve's strategy too, though. She wanted to just get it out there, get the laws, the beginning of the laws in several states, so that at some point the push can come federally. So she's now, I believe, working on the federal side. And this is where I have to tell you, as a woman in my 60s, to see these ladies out there and gentlemen also that are donor conceived pushing for federal legislation, those that are living the experiences, they're the ones that need to really be in the forefront, educating the legislators, letting them know this is what's happened. This is what we need to see stop. This needs to be what needs to be for the future.
Yeah.
And so I applaud all those folks. You know, I think you might have heard of Dove Fox. In California, he also had a really good podcast, and I was discussing with him some of the work that's being done out there. And I told him, I said, listen, I'm moving on to now the mental health side of things, and I want to share more about that with you. But I asked him, I said, would you give me any advice, what you think should be help in the donor conceived community? And he's such a good guy. He said, I am so glad that you're doing the work you're doing. And he goes, I don't think, you know, And I'm paraphrasing because I don't have his messages in front of me, but he felt like, you know, the work that we're doing as nurses, I think as a nurse, suffices in his viewpoint of what can be done. And so I'm really excited about that, that we'll be able to bring a whole different viewpoint, you know, to the table.
Yeah. So tell us about this new project you're working on.
My new adventure.
Yeah. Nurses for NPEs. And the website for that is nursesfornpes.com. But tell us about this project. Give us, how are nurses like you helping?
Well, after spending many years working now in with folks in that have an NPE or donor conceived and the adoptees community, you become to the point where you realize where's the area that you're best at. And I'm suitable in the mental health area, I think, due to the work, to my past work, and just to where I'm at in my own life. That was started due to the fact where I had met with a dozen, and I'm really mean, it was a dozen nurses, 12 other nurses, RNs, and we discussed what is needed, what is really needed out there. And we wanted to be able to see something where people could go to and when they're in acute distress, when they first find out, that shock. And that's what I did a lot of work with. And so I had a really good foundation. And so we have met and had discussions and decided let's go with a way where people can contact us and we can get them the resources that they need. So the website set up, we have a contact information, which we'll put that all in. I'm sure you'll get those all in the notes for this podcast.
Yes.
And people will have a way to find the help that they need. And we work hard to do whatever they need. It's more of the acute phase. I want to be honest with you. I run groups that have people that have been in the groups now for several years. So those groups are private groups on Facebook, and you know, they run in the thousands now. And the good news, bad news here is, the bad news is there's tons of us out there with these NPEs, right? That's the bad news, that there's so many of us that have these tragic identity issues. We feel like imposters because we didn't know our truth. The good news is that many of us that have the NPEs, as all these RNs do, by the way, they're NPEs, as myself, they want to do something to help the other person out.
Yeah.
Remember, I told you I didn't find my biological father right away.
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah.
Because of that and the angst that I went through. And I have to tell you, it wasn't just angst. It was, I was grieving.
Grief, yeah.
In Iceland, the term that they use for grief is angst. I'm going to spell it for you. I think I've got it here. You can look it up. It's like A-N-G-R. It's like angry. Mm-hmm. So grief equals anger. I mean, it just all goes together. I had a lot of anger back then. So the group, you know, that we're trying to do as nurses is to help those in that, those first stages of the shock, anger, and how you can overcome that. So it, I think it's, in my viewpoint, probably the most paramount work that needs to be done right now for folks.
You're meeting yourself on that bar stool, you know, in 2014, where you felt like you were going to fall off. That's where you're meeting people, right there.
I like that. I think you're right. It's, you know, some people would say, hey, maybe you need to look, you know, look at what is it that comes from all this? You know, where are we going with it? But you're right. You're on that bar stool and I'm like about to fall off, but I'm having to stay up and continue to stay up. And all these people that I've been helping, I hope as I stood up on that bar stool and encouraged other people now that I'm staying strong, they can start their journey to find their strength. That strength is not going to come just from us nurses. You know, we as RNs that have gone through this ourselves in the group, the advisors that I'm working with, we know it's just the baby steps. It's the beginning. We have many therapists out there now that have been trained and have the know-how to work with people. And that's important. You know, that's extremely important that you get into therapy if that's what you need, because you don't need to be stuck. And being stuck with this grief, this loss, the anger, it's not a good place to be. And you got to find a way to get through it.
Good words to end on, Alicia. It has been a privilege to have you on our show. And I think our listeners will find this immensely resourceful and helpful. We'll include the link where you can find her website. Again, it's nursingfornpes.com. But I just want to say thanks for taking time out of your day and out of the work that you're doing to chat with me and share your story, your very personal story, and the work that you're doing with us on Venus Rising. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for the work you guys are doing. I love talking to a fellow RN. We get each other. We know what we're talking about for sure. So it's been a pleasure. And I look forward to hearing from any of your audience that if they find out this shocking information or they know somebody, please contact us. And just so you know, community is big now. There's so many people out there. I'm not the only one that can help. There are many, many organizations out there that want to help people. I'm just one person with a dozen RNs behind me.
Yeah.
But yeah. I know there are such amazing groups out there besides.
For sure. And they can find you and maybe get connected with some of your Facebook groups by finding you on Facebook, Alicia Weiss. That's AlisiaWeiss. And that's on Facebook. You can find her and connect with her, send her a message, and I'm sure she'll get you in those groups.
Absolutely.
I'd like to thank each and every listener and subscriber for tuning in. Our goal is, as ever, to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and think beyond the masses. Have an excellent day.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.